storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother, Ryan Andrews. Welcome to this Clash War Battlefield podcast segment. So, this is something I've had to actually do a couple times for this series. I am re-recording this segment because upon listening to the original one, I felt like there were areas where I could have been a lot more clearer. So, a lot of the topics that I'm going to cover in this segment already occurred, and they may seem a little bit dated, meaning you may think, okay, this was done a couple of months ago, but I assure you, I'm recording this in November of 2020, and it is significantly after Joe Biden has been confirmed to be president-elect. So, but there are too many lessons here for me not to make sure that you hear this. So, let's get underway here. When I heard, let me set this up correctly. So, from many of you may know, I've been on a hiatus, which isn't unusual for me. Typically, I'll release a number of new Clash War Battlefield podcast episodes in the beginning of the year, and then take much of the middle of the year off, and then release a bunch of them at the end of the year. You know, no big deal. This year I've been a little bit more engaged in the middle of the year, but the result is just about the same. Me being on hiatus isn't a surprise, but ironically, for this specific series, I was planning on releasing this series in October. The series would have been a little bit shorter. I think three of the episodes weren't even recorded at the time I was thinking about releasing this, which would have been at the beginning of October. But during the end of September, I had to actually go into the hospital because of a respiratory infection, which knocked me down. Absolutely knocked me down. And so, in trying to recover from what was the worst, absolutely worst, devastating illness that I've ever dealt with. And it wasn't COVID. It was not COVID. That was my biggest concern, but it wasn't COVID. Had to take time to rest and recuperate. And it took me a lot longer to get back to myself than I would have liked to believe it would have taken. In my attempt to recover quicker than my body was willing to recover, I recorded the previous episode, which I am now re-recording right now. And upon listening to it, it was scattered and disjointed and, You know, look, I can sometimes be scattered and disjointed. I do know that. But this was terribly scattered and disjointed. And so, you know, I decided that I better re-record it. I am definitely on the health spectrum a lot better than I was then. But, you know, the hiatus wasn't planned. I didn't plan to be on hiatus for as long as I was. I had a couple of episodes ready to go for the end of October. I didn't have the ability to be able to, you know, get those up to you guys to get them edited and stuff. So, yeah, I'm back. I'm still working to be 100%, but hey, things are good. So, while I was sick though, I watched a little bit of the news. I went probably the longest period of time that I've ever gone, in the last decade anyway, with not really seeking out the news. I went like 3 weeks without worrying about the news, which was kind of interesting, you know, to not worry that much about it. But anyway, I think it was during that time that I had heard that Donald Trump had told Bob Woodward back in February that he knew how dangerous COVID-19 was. And I heard the words that he said to Bob Woodward. When I thought about it, I was kind of surprised. I wasn't shocked. You know, I heard that and I go, okay, yeah, that seems appropriate. But I wasn't shocked, which did surprise me a bit. But I contemplated what it meant. I started thinking, okay, there's a message in this. What does it mean to have a president who claims to be the voice for the little people to be revealed to have lied to the general population about the deadliness of a virus, which he himself publicly had been saying was a non-factor, it wasn't real? What did it say? Well, you know, it said something devastating about the elite, and about how the elite look upon the regular people. You know, I have this theory about Donald Trump, why so many of the elite don't like Donald Trump. And it's not just because he's buffoonish and he's vain and what have you. And that he makes America look bad on the international stage. I mean, I think there's a little bit to that. But I think it's less than most people think, because there's a lot of back channels that go to other governments, which, where the elite can actually talk to other governments and be like, you know, listen, the president's doing this, but this is really where we're trying to take the country. And I believe a lot of those back channels were being exercised during Trump's election. There was this period of time back in 2017 where Donald Trump was in Europe. And I thought it was pretty funny that I believe Barack Obama was in Europe at the same time. And it was either the Wall Street Journal or New York Times, who literally speculated that you know, you could literally have two people giving competing messages about where the United States of America was actually taking its relationship with Europe. It was well known that Barack Obama was going to meet with many of the European leaders that Trump was going to meet with. So I've always known that those channels exist. Now, the reason why they really hate Trump is because other people in the elite can fake humanness. They can fake the qualities which attract masses of people to other humans. These people, a lot of them, think like Donald Trump. They just have better impulse control. The problem, therefore, isn't that Donald Trump is making America look bad. It's that Donald Trump is letting the cat out of the bag. The elite, especially those who are drastically egotistical and devastating when it comes to their policy prescriptions for the ordinary people, they are as callous and cold to the normal existence that we all go through. And Donald Trump has completely revealed that. And that's really why they hate him. Now, this rolls right into what the revelation about what he told Bob Woodward says about not only his relationship to people, the people who he supposedly represents, but also the elite's relationship to the people, and particularly what it says about how they view us. Now, I am kind of glad that I'm re-recording this, because at the time that I recorded the previous episode segment, I had not recorded the 10th part to this episode addendum, and it really ties into this. So if you want to save yourself a little bit of time, for continuity's sake, you might want to, as soon as you're done with this one, skip to part 10 and then go back and listen to all those that in between. The emergency, I think, will... Well, let me not really get into that, because then I'll spend like 20 minutes on that. So let me not get into that. But it is good, because that definitely is influencing my thoughts now. Which, you know, I think you'll see after you listen to part 10. What it says, though, is that ultimately, the wealthy does, and I'm not saying that this fits everybody who's wealthy, but they have a very negative view of the ordinary person. That it is the job of the wealthy. And look, you know, there used to be a time 100 years ago where we talked openly about this. We don't anymore. That the wealthy think of the rest of us as children. And they have to coddle us with lies in the face of danger. There used to be a time when we talked about this, where people sought out how the wealthy really feels about the general population, and then published that information. But today, it's all smoke and mirrors. We are to believe that these people really do have the best interest of the population and the public and the communities which they work within at their heart. And it's just not true. It's just not true. Donald Trump lied. Because the way that he was going to cruise into election, or to re-election, was through the economy. If you shut the economy down, guess what was going to happen? The economy was going to buckle. Now, the idiocy in Donald Trump is that he didn't realize if you shut down for 5 or 6 weeks, get the virus under control, you know, create track and trace all across the country, have people wear masks. Guess what? By the time November comes around, hey, things would have been back to close to normal, and he would have cruised through re-election. That's what would have happened. That too, that strategic blunder reveals something also devastating about the wealthy, that they don't plan as well as they think they do. I don't know if it's an American thing, if it's a Anglo-European thing, but the planning capabilities for the elites, especially in this country, but I think it probably does extend to Europe, they've never been as good as history would suggest that they were. All of the financial crashes and disruptions were never foreseen. And only probably as the Second World War ended, did the after war policymakers realize what the future was going to hold. And I'm talking the immediate future. And so they could actually plan for that. But nobody who counted in policy knew the Depression was coming. Nobody knew the Roaring Twenties were coming. Nobody knew that the Progressive Era was coming and the devastation from the federal, state, and local, regional levels, that any of that was coming. Nobody knew World War I was coming. Nobody knew World War II was coming. Nobody knew that the 1890s depression was coming. I mean, they're not good planners. And particularly, they are horrific, horrific macro strategists. They just don't seem to see completely, especially when you're talking about extended periods of time, they just don't seem to see the devastation and the consequences from that devastation that their decisions and actions are going to make. The economy to Donald Trump and to the wealthy, the economy is worth killing hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people for, if it's going to allow 99, 98, 97% of the country to continue living life and essentially making money for the wealthy. That's what this all reveals. That is what this all reveals. When the lieutenant governor, might have been governor of Texas, came out and said, yeah, we're willing to sacrifice grandma and grandpa to keep this great economy going. I mean, that should have told you right there what the elite are really about. As a black person, I've always known this. Okay, not always. I had to reluctantly come to that conclusion over the last 15 years. But I've understood it more and more over the last 10. To see it in real time, to see in real time the wealthy say, you are nothing but human refuge, scraps that we'll toss away. To see that, to feel it, to understand it. The fact that more people aren't outraged by that is insane. It is absolutely insane. I forgot what Trump administration described humans as human capital. As if we were just some notches of wood on a spreadsheet. I mean, what this reveals, ladies and gentlemen, is that to a lot of these elites, you are nothing but cattle. You know, there's the old adage that the right likes to throw around a lot, where you're sheeple. Well, yeah, to a lot of these people, to a lot of the elite, that's all you are. You are cattle to them. You make money for them, and that's all that matters. Which brings me now to the revelations that some congressional people changed their investment strategies based on the secretive briefings that they were given because they were Congress members. First and foremost, these people were given these briefings, if I remember correctly, the end of January, throughout February. So these people knew prior to March, that this thing was going to be bad. And nobody stepped to a microphone and said, the American people need to protect themselves. Nobody stepped to a microphone or a camera and said, it is vital that the American people prepare for this thing. That you must protect yourself and your family. Nobody said that. Literally, to me, that's criminal. To me, that is criminal. That is criminal. And that falls on both parties. But what it reveals, again, is a club mentality. I gotta imagine, and I've thought about this for quite some time, that they were told, you can't say anything to the public. Even though this is, some of these briefings are probably coming as national security briefings. Well, my question then is, what do you consider the nation if it isn't the general populace? What do you consider the nation? Because if this is a national security threat, which COVID-19 is a national security threat, let's be very clear about that. The disharmony, destabilization that COVID-19 itself can actually create economically on a community level, that is a national security threat if I've ever seen one. Well, if you're not telling us to prepare for it before it becomes a major issue, you tell me what you think of as the nation then. But there was something else that was revealed in this story, other than the fact that these people are, criminals, especially those who adjusted their investment strategy. They should be going to jail. They should be going to jail. But there was something else that was revealed. And that was that a lot of these politicians are not public servants. They aren't. They are not public servants. They serve the interest of the corporations. They serve the interest of themselves. And look, I'm not blaming the politicians. Not all of them anyway. Not all of them. See, ladies and gentlemen, there is a decision that was made years ago, and even though it manifested in the Ronald Reagan presidency, again, go back to the Powell memo, they talked about this. There was a decision to stop teaching Americans real history. Because, see, if you not only just to stop teaching you real history, but stop teaching you how to look up facts. See, if you take away real history from a people, and then you strip them of the ability to find their own facts based on what they know to be true and in history, you cut their minds off from their feet. Meaning, it's impossible for a person to walk forward into the future without understanding the past so they can avoid the pitfalls that they experienced in the past. If we were to go back to the 1800s, particularly the 1870s, the 1880s, the 1890s, one of the most interesting stories of that time period was the development of the industrial cartel system here in the United States. We've seen this cartel system through another lens in the 1920s, the 1930s, and the 1940s. When we talk about the mobster scenes from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, what we are talking about, and we say it, what we're talking about is cartels battling one another. Well, the interesting part about that was a lot of these cartels worked with other magnates, other rich people. And they with the other rich people and the violent ends of the cartels, they would control regions in the United States and control specifically the economies. Well, you learn that. Once you learn that, then you look differently on what happened in the 50s and 60s as the Kennedys went after the mob. Now, today, we have a system that is not run necessarily by cartels, but we have a free-for-all monopolistic system where, yes, the regional cartels are gone, but agreements between corporations which are national, which hold national monopolies, create situations where you have cartel-like control over specific regions. And so when a person is elected to that, to represent that region, those interests can walk into the office, probably, you know, in the form of a lobbyist, sit down and say, look, we control this region. Now, we can destroy you, or you can play ball. And oftentimes, because these people are trying to do good, they'll play ball. Now, this is something that most progressives don't get. They do not understand the connection between the World Trade conference that happened in Seattle in 1999 and the connection to today and how that really set up the system, or not even set it up, it codified it, the system, where just like the 1880s and the 1890s, the politicians don't belong to the people. They belong to the money. Recently, I found out something very interesting, and I want to say it was in an interview with Lawrence Wilkerson. A good 80% of the time, you know what congressional members are doing? Raising money. Money. 80% of their time is spent raising money. Well, if you're spending 80% of your time raising money, heck, if you're spending 70% of your time raising money, you're going to have to pay back all of those favors. All of those favors which you are offering in order to obtain that money. This is why I'm not blaming all the politicians. Because even with some of the most hated people in Congress, I have watched interviews with individuals whom, prior to watching those interviews, I was like, God, I can't stand that person. And I'm not saying any names, but there are people, even Republicans, who I've watched when, you know, a interviewer asked them a question, I watched the fear cross their face as they're like, no, 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 I'm not getting into that. I'm not getting into that. Move on. That's why I'm not blaming all the politicians. What I am blaming, though, is the system which allowed this to happen. We went through a period of time where we fought against this as a nation, and we had curbed this back, and they have bought it back. This reveals to you, ladies and gentlemen, that those who are running this economy, because that's what they see the United States as, this is just an economy to them. They don't really care. They don't. And I wish they would. Because the sad part about it is, we care about them. I said that to some guy wrote me an email back in the end of last year, I think it was. And he asked me, he said, you know, why are you so hard on the people who are the, you know, creators of innovation and, you know, entrepreneurship on this country? I mean, if you ever created something, then, you know, you would not be tearing this down, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I'm hard on them because I believe they can and should do better. Pure and simple. But they refuse to. They refuse to, even as they're bringing back Carlyle's work on wealth. So, let me transition here, because I want to, that is just, they need to do better. They need to do better. And that's why I am so hard on them. You're not giving the money so it could puff up your ego. Now, from everything that I was talking about with the structure of society and politicians, I want you to also understand that this is why these people are fearful, absolutely fearful of the current movement to strip corporations of their power to influence elections and politicians by just offering them money. Because once you do that, once you take their ability to pay politicians away, guess what happens? Those politicians no longer belong to them. And this country will change drastically and dramatically. And look, I think on some level, some of the wealthy are starting to get the mess that they've created and the anger that they've created specifically among young people. And here I'm talking people under the age of 30. When you, and some of you may not know this, I didn't know this, I'm learning a lot of this stuff this year. So when I find stuff out, you know, I try to give it to you guys. But when you have a streaming platform, Means TV, M-E-A-N-S TV, Means TV. When you have a streaming platform that openly bills itself as an anti- or post-capitalist streaming platform, when you have that, and you have movies that over the last couple of years have been decidedly class-conscious and harsh to capitalism. When you have those things emerging, and that says nothing about the number of Americans identifying as socialists, as democratic socialists, and the like. When you have all of that, and you even have a socialist newspaper that is doing very well, Jacobin, and other really good things that are developing that are definitely leftist, that are definitely anti-capitalist, when you have all of that developing, and you have no argument against their critiques because in real time, their critiques are being manifested via the situations which you are creating. Guess what? You got to do something different. And I think, you know, we are seeing people who before wouldn't have been given the time of day by the elite finally being listened to. When Mark Cuban, who, you know, look, I'm not a huge fan of Mark Cuban, but I give credit where credit is due. And by the way, I'm not a fan of Mark Cuban, not because, like, he doesn't seem like a nice guy or anything like that. No, I've never just been a huge fan of Mark Cuban. It's just been whatever. But when he comes out in April and says, no, the government needs to spend a lot of money quickly and now. Now. Forget this libertarian nonsense. It's garbage. We need to do this now for the betterment of the nation. This guy was a hardcore Ayn Randian, and suddenly he's sounding like FDR. I gotta imagine that he got some criticism for that among his fellow libertarian billionaires who, you know, have never tested their theories to see if they actually work. And that includes in Silicon Valley. But when he's coming out and saying that, when Mark Blythe, who is a man who I respect tremendously, I've been listening to Mark Blythe now for like 5, 6, 7 years and just love everything he does. But when Mark Blythe comes out and he trips on himself on saying that, look, capitalism is right, but capitalism needs to be, you know, adjusted. It's the only system that has been proven, da da la 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 la, you know, that tells me that even he is recognizing that the elite are getting a little bit shaky. Now, the question that comes with that shakiness is, what are they going to do about the revelations coming out of their system? Are they going to say, yes, we need the New Deal. Let's implement the New Deal en masse. We're not even going to think about it. Just, it's time to scale back all of this nonsense of libertarianism. Let's go back to the New Deal to save capitalism so we can actually show people that capitalism is decent. Or are they going to do what I really think, especially from the Silicon Valley standpoint, they want to do, which is, I hate to say it, guys, but implement some form of soft fascism. We already see elements taking shape, but we just haven't gotten to the point where it is noticeable completely. I don't know. I will say, though, that at the end of the day, this virus has been a revelating force. It has revealed so much about the elite that, you know, I was watching a housing march, or not a housing march, but a housing, there was a program that was taking place, and Status Quo was showing it. Status Quo, by the way, is really great, guys. They're on-the-ground journalists. Please support them. They're really good. Status, C-O-U-P, Status, C-O-U-P. Go out there. Check them out. They really do great on-the-ground coverage stuff. And they deserve a lot of help with what they're doing. But I was thinking, you know, as I was watching this piece that they had up, all these people who were living in New York City, some of them housing insecure, that means they're homeless or partially homeless, and some of them in tenements that are just, you know, you really shouldn't be living in them tenements. And I said to myself, you know, the wealthy have just completely abandoned any semblance of governing the entire society. When people step forward and they say, we need you to do this, to help us, the elite have just thumbed their nose. At the same time, these elites are the same ones yelling about protect our democracy, protect our democracy. Here's the funny thing, family, and this is something that, you know, you need to really get around your mind. One, this is a republic. This is not a democracy. This was not designed to be a democracy. This is a republic. You cannot have a democratic republic. It doesn't happen. Okay? If you compare the system which the United States is using today, and even the system that they were using in 1776, you compare it to what the Romans used, and you see very quickly a lot of similarities, and not small ones either. Don't forget, the Romans got the vote, but they were not a democracy. The Romans, especially the elite, thought horribly of democracy. And they criticized Greek culture for their leanings towards democracy. Absolutely, they hated it. This is not a democracy. We need to understand that. And so, when these folks are talking about save our democracy, the question is, whose democracy are you really talking about? Are you talking about the general populace's democracy? Because the general populace does not have a democracy. We have voting rights, but we do not have a democratic structure. We cannot hold accountable representatives. England has a better democratic policy than we do. So the democracy that the wealthy are talking about belongs to the wealthy. The wealthy have all the power. If the wealthy wants the president gone, to an extent, not always, the president will be gone. If they don't like somebody in Congress, that person's gone. So there is no our democracy. The general populace does not have a democracy. Now, that's changing. That's changing. The question is, will the republic, which this country is, turn into a dictatorship before democracy can take hold here? Because the next chapter in human evolution is going to be democracy. Federated concepts is the only contribution to democracy that republics will ever and should have ever made. The idea of federated structures to hold vast stretches of land together, binding it to what we call a nation state. Now, by the way, and I don't mean to get into this too deeply, I'm not one of those people who believe that the nation state doesn't have any use in a modern world. I don't believe that. But what I do believe is that just like territory inhabited by Native Americans wasn't necessarily owned by them, but was cared for by them, that is what a nation state is for. You are to care for that land and make sure that it is healthy, and it is its vitality is maintained so it can contribute to the world, and thus you can contribute to the world. We are going to see over the coming several months, couple years, I suppose, exactly what these people plan on doing with this republic. You might ask what it takes to remember. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. I'm your brother, Brian Medis. See you on the next one, y'all. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and there are lives in the balance.
Thank you.